This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
That's right, Chris Plunkett, Disaster Recovery Hour. I am your host every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. here at 1160 a.m. WVNJ. Broadcasted and throughout the metropolitan area, and we all know what that actually means. I don't know if it's a Happy Memorial Day or Memorial Day. I'm kind of conflicted with happy because there's nothing, you know, the men and women have given their lives to give us our freedoms and fight for our freedoms. In the local papers throughout the entire metro area, whatever local paper that you do get, most front pages did have the faces and names and services that the men and women have died. And for us here in the Bergen County area, and then the Star Ledger, I'll read those names at the end of the show. I think it's important to reiterate that all the time. I always I find it peculiar that things get pushed back, you know, whatever the flavor of the day is inside the media. And, you know, our show, it's talk radio. It's preparedness. It's the reporting about disasters and things that we can help out, whether it's my personal knowledge or other individuals with my guests that come on the show. There's actually another buzz there. With helping out citizens and municipalities and cities and the local government. I will have some other government people down the line who I've had some small conversations with these people. But back to talk about Memorial Day. It was a nice day. It started off rainy. And I hope people went to parades or they thanked the vet. My father-in-law and my father are both vets. My dad is about 8,000 miles away, so I didn't get a chance to say hello to him, but I did see my father-in-law, shook his hand, say thank you. I hope someone else out there, you guys did the same. And then with some other things regarding, you know, they're encompassing the 9/11 victims, and I think that's that should be part of, besides having 9/11, again, it's my opinion, on Memorial Day, the people, the law enforcement, the firemen, the EMTs, well, you know, the NYPD and the Port Authorities, the different branches of law enforcement on there, not in, along with all our fellow Americans and non-American citizens. Some of it is the World Trade Center, so you're talking about international businesses over there. I read a very great article about a piece of steel that was being donated. It's going to be in Patterson, and it was the there's about 500 law enforcement personnel, along with some dignitaries and such, and they had a ceremony for unveiling the piece of steel, and it's gone throughout the counties, the Long Island, Westchester, here to Jersey, and so on and so forth. So I think, again, my opinion. This is the first couple of minutes of the program. I like to throw out my own thoughts. And there's some really good news came in. Something I saw on the internet. A buddy of mine out there in Missouri, the death toll is actually come down. So they found some extra people, and so it was overestimated, which is a great thing. Which unfortunately came on another email that I did get, and that was with the Haiti, the overstating of the homeless and the death claims that the Haitian government had talked about, and because we had, I think we pledged $5.5 billion for the Haitian government, and we talked about it. I've had some guests on who were AIDS workers down there and did some great work. A lot of NGOs down there helping out the Haitian people, but unfortunately, you know, there are a couple bad apples in every bunch. So these numbers were revisited, and looks like I guess that's one of the reasons why governments, when they pledge money, it's a pledge. It's not actually given to that particular time, at that particular time, and they talk about, you know, give me some proof, and unfortunately I need proof, because that's a lot of money. I do have one of those AIDS workers who's a very good friend of mine, Paul Sebring. He's on the line. Paul was down there a couple days after the earthquake, which was January 12th of last year. And Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm good. Paul's calling in from Arizona. He just got back in country. He was doing some work down in Ecuador for his foundation. It's a non-government organization, what we call an NGO, assisting with some of the natural disasters down there. And I know Paul and I have been exchanging emails. He was talking about some of the tornadoes and trying to get involved with that. And I know a lot of people here in our area have gone down there. I know several friends down there, and it's summer. It's, you know, they passed the rescue, and now it's a recovery issue regarding human life. Things are things. You can rebuild them, but obviously lives and get changed permanently. when someone close to you dies. But Paul, talk to me about this overstating of the homeless, because you were down there, had you on the program before. There is the podcast, if you ever wanted to listen to it, you can go to drhradio.net and look into Paul and my their interview about the Haitian situation. So what is your intel on that, just quickly, because I got a couple other guests, but I haven't spoken to you so long. I feel bad about that, because it's been moving kind of quickly, and I know you were in Ecuador. So what is your thoughts on that?
On the overstating of the death toll in Haiti, I mean, when I was down there right after the earthquake, it was absolute chaos, and it, I mean, not having any experience with it, I can understand how it might happen, in the sense that there's so much confusion, all the records were lost, everyone, there was just pure pandemonium everywhere, and trying to initially assess what's going on so that you can try and put together a number for financial aid to send to Haiti, I can see how it happened, and that's why, you know, I'm glad that they've done the revision of it. I'd like to see the, you know, the final numbers, how they came up with it, to ensure that that is an accurate number, and it's not an understated number at this point.
Now, is it the Haitian government, or they actually have an arm to handle such things like that? Because I know you, some of the things that we spoke about way before was the frustration of working along with other NGOs. They were just so, you know, so much red tape involved that you just couldn't do what you wanted to do. And that's hence the reason why you guys formed MMRC Global. Along there's also MMRC Haiti now, Paul, with Paul Wagner. But you guys... you know, you guys formed this organization to really get to the root of it and start helping people. Now, how did the government come up with these kinds of numbers? Do they take it from the NGOs, from the outside, like a third-party administrator, or was it the actual Haitian government? Do you know?
I think it was the government working in conjunction with USAID. It was maybe one or two of the larger organ groups that were out there that were actually representing governments doing the number counting on it. And so I think it was a joint effort. That's what I've read, but I can't be 100% of that.
Yeah, yeah. And which, you know, dovetails back to what I was talking about with the Missouri email that I got, that not as many people had died. Because, like you said before, about all this, the chaos, you know, overestimating and so on and so forth, there could be mistakes. I mean, these are human beings in time of crisis. Mistakes are made. Unfortunately, with the supplies being held up at the port, you know, and it starts to cast aspersions, and you know, things can get a little dicey. And then all of a sudden, this comes out. You know, after a year and a half, is there any progress? Where's the money? Well, the money wasn't justifiable. You know, it's a tough call, right?
Yeah, it is. It's really a tough call. I mean, if you compare Haiti's earthquake to the cholera outbreak, the earthquake was chaos and mayhem, and everyone was scrambling to try and save lives, and it was just everywhere. Whereas with cholera, yes, it's just as bad as emergency. I mean, what do we have, 267,000 affected with cholera with a little over 5,000 deaths? But at the same time, that was one of those things that when we were fighting cholera, we would call in and give updated numbers on a daily basis.
Right, right.
These were numbers that we saw on the ground that, you know, we were able to call in and see right away, versus with the earthquake, it was just, you know, bodies were lining the streets. They were just picking everybody up that was dead and, you know, just taking them out and burning them and burying them. It was just, you know, it was chaos.
Yeah, and for the international community, it's, you know, and we talked about the people volunteering. And then they get gun shy. It's like, well, geez, you know, where's my money going? Or, you know, can we trust this government? And so on and so forth. So it kind of, you know, there's a bigger picture there. It's just not, oh, we made a mistake with the... And again, it's not pointing of the fingers of the Haitian government, because God knows, I mean, the place got crushed. You know it firsthand. And mistakes can be made. But in a cynical world, you know, when you talk about that IMF guy, with the banker guy, you know, living in Park Avenue in those, you know, home confinement, you know, living, you know, $12,000-$15,000 a month apartments, you know, it just adds more to the pile of being cynical and non-trusting. And you want to do the good thing, but, you know, there's just so many people who are willing to take advantage of the good in this world and spin it the wrong way. And you saw it firsthand down there, along with Paul Wagner. But now you're moving into other areas, and you and I know you've got frustrated with those with that situation down there. Well, we got a couple minutes, but what's new right now, and we can talk about it because I want to bring on the show next month and talk about some of our NGO stuff.
Okay, well, I just got back from Ecuador about a day and a half ago. I'm back in Arizona now with visiting family, and had gone down there. We were hoping to help out with the upcoming floody rainy season, and thankfully it didn't happen. They've got, you know, notorious for just flooding out thousands of people, and it's the infrastructure is rather weak there. There is a little bit of it, but we were hoping to help out. So while we were down there, since we saw that things weren't going to be in a disaster mode, we teamed up with a group called NGO called LEAP. And they're plastic surgeons. We found a hospital down there, and I started identifying kids with cleft lips and cleft palates.
Mm.
And we just dedicated 3 months to helping get this program up and running. And when we wrapped everything up, I wanted to go to Joplin, Missouri, because they had been the most recently affected. And I spoke prior to that. I was either going to go to Alabama or Mississippi. And, you know, it just seemed that, like you were saying, there's a lot of donors from Morris. It was trying to find a truck to borrow from somebody for a few days, and it just seemed that, you know, we've gone to the well so many times because the people that donate to us trust us.
Sure.
Because they know that we are going to use the money appropriately. But, you know, we are a small NGO, and we do have a small base to pull from, and I think it was just one of those times where it was, you know, everyone had done so much already that it was just one of those things where everybody just needed a break. And so I just decided, you know, at the very literally 1 hour before my flight was supposed to, the flight to Arizona was leaving, I just booked the flight and got on it and came home.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to, one of my colleagues in Joplin, I'm going to talk to him next week. So if you have the opportunity to listen, maybe we can, I know, well, I actually didn't preface it at the beginning of the program. Paul's got medical training for years being in EMT in the emergency room. So Paul has a, when it comes to disasters, especially with the Haiti, Paul's got a lot of badges on his arms, if you will. Paul, I appreciate you calling in. I know you just landed. I know it's 3 hours difference. We need some catch up time, especially next month. But after next week's program, or maybe during the program, if I can get both of you on the line, let's talk about it. Maybe he can direct you in some areas where you can be of assistance.
It sounds like
him. All right, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Let's go to a break, because I have my next guest is calling in from Florida. It's Jim Arnett. Jim's from Wanda, also with his he's an executive director. So we'll call right back. Bye-bye.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. sparkies.com or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Hey, welcome back. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Paulie, I appreciate that. I know you're listening on the internet, and that is if you want to listen on the internet, which you should. Not a lot of people are driving around with their computers fired up, so it's drhradio.net. You can sign up for the podcast by putting in your email. So, again, it's drhradio.net. And sign up for the podcast. Podcasts are great because you can listen to it at your leisure. It's just like TiVo, if you will. Because I know some of my friends, and you know, I'm working, I got to do this. So I'll catch a show on the weekend when I get to listen, and so on and so forth. So again, it's drhradio.net, and just sign up for the podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I think it's April 19th, I had Steve Neary and I had Jim Arnett. Jim's the executive director, as well as Steve of WANDA, and that's the World Association of Natural Disaster Awareness and Assistance. Jim, how you doing? I got Jim on the phone.
I'm doing good, Chris.
Not dyslexic, I'm not ADD, but I got questions up the wazoo, and I'm like, which one comes out first out of my mouth? So bear with me on that, audience. I know Jim already knows my MO. So, Jim, WANDA, if people haven't heard the prior program, give a little background on WANDA, and we'll fly from there.
Background on WANDA is was set up after the earthquake in Haiti, being in South Florida and seeing the panic and the shock of something happening that close. Steve and I saw a need to do something, and one of the things that we saw that we both agreed on, having being recently new fathers, is the children. The children is just the thing is probably the worst victims of all of these things. So we developed WANDA, and primarily as a educational. So that's our awareness side. We're developing a child book series with easy to understand lessons about natural disasters. And, of course, you throw in the assistance there because there's so much going on in the world that requires help. So we started it off. We've been, it's well over a year now, and I'd love to say that since our last meeting or talk, we were getting ahead. But Mother Nature, I expected to take a little bit of a nap, and she didn't, as we all know.
Yeah, that's, and it just came, it is about 5 weeks, it's just after we talked, it was the first tornadoes, and then we had the flooding in the Mississippi, and got that direct intel from Jerry Giesinger, my guru at the Academy at Service Master, and then we get more tornadoes. It's just like, what is it, we have 1,100, almost 1,200 right now, and it's, the end of this month, which is May.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And now throw into the mix, Chris, not to overstep you, but throw into the mix that we got hurricane season officially open tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, this is like the monster mash. You know, all the worst guests are coming to your house for your party. I mean, some of the numbers were like 1,600. It was 1,600 earthquakes, tornadoes in 2008, and 2009 was 1,100, and last year was 1,200. And we're at 1,200 now. We still have a half a year to go. And the way things,
mind-boggling.
Yeah, insane. And the Joplin thing gives me kind of the, you know, watching it, and I'm just like, you know, I should probably be down there, and I think about the time I was away with the Florida hurricanes, and there's so many good guys down there, and I talk to a couple of buddies on a daily basis what's happening, and it's still in that, you know, it's demolished. It's just demolished. There's neighborhoods that are pristine, and then, you know, you're going three blocks over it, and it's leveled. And I know part of WANDA is definitely well, when we originally talked, it was talking about the Haiti thing, but to bring this awareness here into our country, because we have our own natural disasters. Because people talk about, like, hey, why am I going to send my money overseas? You know, we have enough issues and problems in this country. And that's one of your, you were trying to, and you are doing, you know, generating towards the American citizen.
Absolutely, 100%, Chris. It's one of those things where it's not that, I mean, we're a world-based organization, mm-hmm. because it needs to be. And you know, the ultimate goal was to concentrate on our home base, which we'll call North America. We won't even, you know, and branch out. And it's just, it was so unpredicted what we would be diving into in this year, and with Mother Nature. And it's, so we've been forced to deal with the global issue rather than building slowly. So instead of laying the foundation and building the house slowly, we've thrown up the tin roof, and we're at it. We're gung ho. Let's just say it's outside of my daily work, which pays my bills. I spend a lot of time outside of that, evenings, mornings, working for Wanda.
Yeah. And I mean, just like you, I mean, I have my day job, and that is CPP, Emergency Services and Restoration. Also, I've joined up forces with Service Masters, which is a national chain, and it's been very good. Educational wise, has been fantastic. But yeah, we have day jobs, and I have the radio show, and you know, I put a lot of thought into the radio show, and I think about, God, you know what? There's just so much out there that, you know, people need to know about. I think about this organization that I'm getting involved with, the ACP, Association of Contingency Planners. You know, they got chapters throughout the country, and businesses need to stay in business. You know, Joplin is leveled. You know, where's that money coming from to pay for social services? You know, or to pay the civic employees? You know, when you're out of business, yeah.
It's mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling, Chris. And here's what I've come to learn is that, you know, at least in this country, we are so influenced, I guess would be a right word to say, by the media. And so as it's mind-boggling to sit in front of your TV at the 6 o'clock news and watch that news report and see those pictures, what people don't understand is that step outside of the TV and stand on that street and looking around personally. And people don't think about that, okay, insurance companies will come through, but how long? I mean, what are these people doing when, what would you do if you, let's say you didn't even go through the storm. Let's say you went to the shopping center and you came home and that's what you walked into. Where do you start? Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, the American public is subjected to the media, and it's just like we talked about when we were talking about it before. It's the Japan fundraising was very strong on when Japan was the news every right. 6 and 11 o'clock, and it was an emotional report, and it got people's heartstrings. And as it fell off of the top story, the fundraising fell off, mm-hmm. and it's just... It goes to show that it's just hard, and when you watch the news, people, and when you're thinking it, you have to try to put yourself in there because it's absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, I'm sitting here and I look around my office, and I couldn't even tell you what, if this place got destroyed tomorrow, what would I be missing, and how long would it take me to realize what I was missing?
Yeah. I agree, and that's part of that contingency planning and risk management, and if you just joined, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. It's every Tuesday. And if you want to do some comments, throw some comments out there, go to drhradio.net, drhradio.net. And there's also the 1-800 number, and that's 1-800-962-1160. Jim Arnett is my guest today, one of my guests, because we're going to be segueing into a field, God, how did we classify him? But we'll get to that in just a second. But Jim's with WANDA, World Association of Natural Disaster Awareness and Assistance. And I'm not laughing by the way I'm saying it, because Jim gets me excited. I get this, you know, I just love like the public service announcement kind of thing. And you're right. Look around your office. What would happen if something happened there? And when's the insurance company? And here's a crazy, I got this the other day, a crazy figure. Digress for a second about insurance companies. Disasters, yeah, they pay out claims. They're in the business to pay out claims, and you know, they collect your premiums, so on and so forth. But it also makes people aware of, okay, what am I not covered for? you know?
Right.
So these natural disasters, I'm not saying there's silver linings because someone's going to make money off it. Hey, listen, I'm in the disaster business. I know I have fellow guys down there making money right now, but bottom, you know, a lot of guys really are doing it because they feel like it's the right thing. And you know what? I think you have your business. You make a living. You pay your bills. But you know, you're donating your time and your money to this foundation, and to do the right thing. And I think a lot of people do that. And I do think that. I don't think blood money out there. I think there is blood. I think there's you know, some bad apples out there. But the insurance company is really not the bad, is not the enemy there, because again, it makes people aware of what they're not covered for. You know, tornadoes, floods, earthquakes, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. I the insurance company isn't the big bad. It's funny because they're not the big bad corporate monster. It comes down to what you repeat every week in your show, and it's educate yourself. Don't call your insurance agent and ask what if. Don't just go by what you think you absorbed that one time that you sat down with your insurance agent and signed your policy, because it's so overwhelming in that sales type pitched environment that you miss the fine line, and you know, people have to be proactive. Bottom line.
Yeah, and it's for the show, and being in this in my industry, and meeting guys like yourself. You know, it's made me. I'm a lucky person because I'm able to regurgitate this information that I get from you, that I get from Harvey Baton, from the ACP out of New York City, and the fire chiefs and the law enforcement guys. You know, hey, you know, what would you like Joe Citizen or John Q Citizen, however that phrase goes, that name goes.
Right.
You know, what can we tell you to help your fellow guy? And that's what I look at for the program, you know. And that's why we had such a great program the last time you guys came on. I think we're gonna go to a break. We'll talk about a couple of things, and then we're gonna get what is it, Brian Loberg from Japan, actually calling in from Tokyo. Dave, can we have them both on the same line? Is that possible? Okay, cool. So let's go to a break. Like I say, pay a couple bills because we all got to pay them, and be right back. Thanks.
Attorney Michael Guidreau is the cure for your bankruptcy blues. With a bankruptcy success rate of nearly 100%, Michael Guidreau is an expert in bankruptcy, credit card settlement, and loan modification. For a consultation, call 201-837-7777. 201-837-7777. Call today and get rid of your bankruptcy blues. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble. but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least 1 in 4 businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room, talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Disaster Recovery. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2. We've had a couple of guests on. We still have our second guest on. We're moving into our third guest. But I do have a web question. It's from Michelle, and she's actually calling. The question came in from Florida. It says, local emergency planners in Florida are implementing new measures for evacuation and have produced new surge maps indicating where flooding will occur. Is this happening in your area as well? Well, that's a question I'm going to need to answer probably through an email or next week's show. Or if somebody out there listening, an OEM director here in the county, out in New York, Westchester, Long Island, perhaps they can chime in and answer that. But I will tell you this, Michelle, I will get an answer for you without a doubt. Now, Jim, you're down in Florida.
Yep.
Have you heard of this also? I mean, it's got to
It has been. I mean, it's with the looming hurricane season starting officially tomorrow, it definitely, there has been a lot of talk of this kind of stuff, and all the agencies kick into preparedness. So we've been seeing some stuff for the past 30 to, if not 60 days of preparation.
I guess, you know what, some of the Long Island guys if you're listening out there, chime in for that, because, you know, it's very demographically, it's kind of like the low-lying plain kind of thing out there, too. Not as much marshy as Florida, but right. I don't want to waste Brian's dime.
Right.
Brian Loberg's calling in from Tokyo. Brian, you got us?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for waking up.
I didn't sleep yet.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, I tried to nap, but I just got too much going on with the pressure of little time. So I've been just emailing back and forth with my contacts here all night, just trying to get things organized. So
is
not an issue anymore.
Yeah. And some of my other guys that I've known when they did international disaster relief, it just was on the back burner for quite a while, whether weeks or months.
Yeah, it's an amazing kind of adrenaline that you have that just keeps you going. So.
Yeah. So Brian, you're why don't you tell us how you and Jim work together? Just so the audience gets a background.
He's in Florida, and I'm representing the Canadian division that we're starting. So I've decided to come over here. Basically, what we've got is some stuff that arrived today, and I thought it was a good idea. We both thought it was a good idea to come and sort of film it, show it, bring it up ourselves, and to show people exactly where their money's going instead of just leaving it in the hands of others.
Yeah. You know, it's again, Jim and I talked about it. Not to minimize it, say the flavor of the day, but it is. I mean, it was hot. It was, the donations were rolling and things were happening, and then it just kind of. And again, you know, in America, you know, listen, we've had the Mississippi. It's been very similar to, the damage that's happened down there, because the artery of the Mississippi is used throughout the country for goods. Now, Japan is, Japan, China, you know, major producers and importers and exporters, we need the goods from Japan, and now you're not getting certain things for certain vehicles.
A lot of industry here is destroyed or postponed or, either one of those words. I mean, it's not good. It's massive here. Like, I can't believe it. I haven't been up yet, but I've seen video of my friend that I stayed with. As soon as I got here, he went up, came back, so he shot the latest video in the last few days. I've interviewed a number of people that have gone up, locals pretty much, and it's 500 square kilometers, or and that's, think about it, like, it's unreal, and it just goes for miles and miles and miles and miles and hours.
So from Tokyo, from where you're at right now to the epicenter, what for listener issues, is it from Boston to Atlantic City? What's the distance?
I don't know. It's about an 8-hour drive, so
okay.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
Right. On roads here that are a bit odd and weird, so it's probably in America, probably about a 5 or 6 hour drive.
Okay. Yeah, right, because you're winding your snake in it up there instead
of
really...
Yeah, about 300 miles or so. Okay. But it's actually further north than that. Like, that's Fukujima, or... Fukujima is about that, and then it's further north is actually the worst, and that's where we're hoping to go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, you've heard of Sendai and all that stuff, but this is
right.
Actually further north, so...
One of the things that I discussed with some of the guys down in Haiti was, getting the goods on the ground and then dispersing them and getting them out. Is that the number one challenge right now?
Unbelievably challenging. Yes, Jim knows the story. We've been chatting, and I've probably gone through, I think I'm up to about 11 people now, sort of like underground, above ground, I call it all over ground. Just one person leads me to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, just to find basically a truck and a driver and the right timing and just to get it to the right areas, then it's really, really hard for a few reasons. One of them, too, is customs here in Japan accepting goods. You'd think it would be easy to help people, but it's actually quite the opposite. And, coming over here on our own dime and then spending Wanda's money on the goods, it was a bit of a whim, so we didn't have a lot of time to prepare, and we're learning a lot here as well.
Well, that's really a duplicate story from the guys when they went down to Haiti. Now you're talking about Haiti, pretty much a third world country, and then you're talking about Japan, a superpower, if you will, economically, not military wise, obviously, but and classified or designated as the number one prepared country in the world. But here you go. You're talking about the same experiences that it went through. Now, Haiti was different because my understanding, and this, I'm just regurgitating what they told me, but there was more corruption. It's not Japan. It's not the corruption thing as much as Jesus.
Here it's more delay, period. Just that's it. It's not corruption. It's delay. Like, they took the Red Cross a month to get $1 billion of the stuff rolling, and that's really what the problem's been, is delay. So a lot of people have just been sort of running up like renegades and dodging through lines and just getting anything they can to people, but there's so many stories and versions of what's happening up there that I could go on forever.
And
Chris, just to interject here, I mean, what we have to remember is that we're in post 9/11.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
So when we throw into the international, I never thought in a million years that it would be as difficult logistically as what we went through to get those supplies there. And our supplies are sitting on the ground as of this morning. We're waiting customs clearance. So. But everybody claims, don't bank on it. I mean, that this custom clearance could take 2 weeks. We're in a post 9/11 world where even sending things that are outright obvious to help people are being scrutinized. And we also get we get scrutinized as far as getting it there. We couldn't go on passenger airplanes because we're not an approved shipper, which takes a 3 to 5 week process, probably inspected by FBI, etc., to make sure that I'm not on a most wanted list or a terrorist before I can put a pallet of supplies onto a passenger plane. So we were limited to the cargo lines, which they actually did a great job. The items did arrive there, I believe, within 4 or 5 days. I think they landed yesterday or the day before, so now we're just in a waiting period.
Well, and the other thing too is I don't want to be here forever either. No offense to this lovely world, but I've got things to do and I can't just sit here and wait for stuff. So I mean, it'd be nice if I got here within the timeline I'd planned on, but I will wait longer. But there's only a certain amount of time I can wait too, right? So
I guess.
By the way, they call it 311 here.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yep.
Wow. That's going to be etched just like our 911. That's Jim, for you to make me aware of that and the listeners aware of that. You're right. I guess Al Qaeda or the Taliban, whatever, didn't think about 10 years ahead, just trying to get goods from point A to point B with a natural disaster.
Absolutely. And not to step on Brian's toes, but because he's the point of contact, and I'm playing armchair quarterback. I remember in our last get together, someone sent in a question of whether I or Steve had personally been there, and it's one of those things where I would love to be there with Brian. I lived in Japan, so I did live in Japan many years ago, so I have a familiarity. So I've done everything I could do to prep Brian, but the amount of organization and just actually staying in touch with Brian and getting the daily updates, you know, with the time change before I go to bed and when I wake up in the morning, and us communicating. It really does require an armchair quarterback somewhere with home base.
Right, right. Yeah.
But he'll tell you the story of you know, what he's learning and what we will discuss for next time, and it's something that we never thought about.
You know what I would suggest to anybody right now?
People in Japan are raising money and getting the supplies from local, so they're spurring business, not to tell the story on you, Brian.
No, I'm just going to say that what I'm going to do next time, or we're going to do next time, Jim, is we're going to bring money, and that's it. We're going to raise money, we're going to fly over here, and we're going to go up, and we're going to shop locally up in the Sendai North region, feed the community there with the money, and then take the items right from there, knowing exactly where we got to go right away. There's so many issues. Like, I'll give you one quick story. They're so regiment and kind of nuts about this, is where if I had a 99 t-shirt and I had to go to a school and there was 100 kids, they wouldn't let me bring any. They have to have everything, has to get to every person. If you're one short, you can't give anything to anybody. So there's these crazy rules, and there's warehouse space is so limited. So if you bring stuff up and it's not needed, you don't know where it goes or where it sits or who takes it. And it's a malnutrition thing up there. Sure, they're making rice and noodles, but they don't have any vegetables. So there's all these crazy things. And so I think I've learned from all these meetings so far is really just bring money, spend the money on your own, or take money from the organization administration or whatever, and fly over and just bring it up, shop, feed the community, and then you can grab right there that they need.
I got Brian Loberg. He's calling in from Tokyo. He's with Wanda, and also with Jim Arnett, who's executive director of Wanda. He's calling in from Florida. He's at the command center, if you will, right, Jim? I do have a question. It's from Harold, but real quickly, it's DRH Radio you are listening to. DRHRadio.net is the website you can go to with the comments page, and you are listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. The question is from Harold. It is a web question. It says, will life in northern Japan ever return to normal, and if so, when? What's your take on that?
Never. Absolutely never. I mean, I guess. Well, I shouldn't say that, but not in our lifetime. It's unbelievable. It's just horrible. I mean, again, I haven't been there yet, but I'm seeing full-screen video of 2 hours worth of my friend driving around 3 days ago. Got a pretty good gist of what it is, and nothing's changed. It seems piles of debris, and that's about it. Nothing's really been built. A few things have been cleaned out and restored, but and then the power plants are still doing their thing. I couldn't even give you an update on what's happening with those, but it's massive.
Now
it's
ridiculous, Brian. Now it's the whole country, right? The entire country, the entire country is affected.
Yeah,
there's not
everything.
There's,
you wouldn't believe it. I'll tell you a quick story. It's not electricity. No big city Tokyo lights at night. There's some, but the cities, they call it sort of dead. So if you come as a tourist, you want to look from the Tokyo Tower, you don't see the big bright lights and all that stuff. People don't have air conditioning on when they could already kind of start now, but they've already planned for the summer to limit it. And even the regiment suit-wearing Japanese that are all sort of very tidy and sharp are allowed to wear T-shirts and you know, golf shirts instead of suits because they won't have air conditioning. It's going to be hot. This place is super hot already, and it's not even summer. And I can't imagine being in the trains or subways and offices and stores when they're going to limit that. We've had brownouts all the time, water. You've got to flush. They have degree on a toilet to flush how much you want to flush, and they basically just you set them to nothing and barely flush. I mean, it's just that's all Tokyo, right?
And and Chris, keep in mind, since Brian landed and has been there, he's gone through the typhoon.
Yeah, we just went through Super Typhoon Songda, and that was fun.
Well, it's
that was another. It wasn't horrible, but it was not needed. I mean, it was just 100 millimeters of rain for 2.5 days. And then about 50, 60, 70 mile an hour winds.
Now, is that equivalent to hurricane season right now?
Yeah, it's the same thing as typhoon season, and they spin the other way. So that's about the only difference.
Okay. Oh, well, that's...
It's not good.
Yeah, you know, you just, again, we have, you know, Jim and I know firsthand because we're watching the news every day of the Joplins and the Talusca and, you know, all this, and the Mississippi, because nothing's... You know, lots of things have changed, but it's just the magnitude and the...
Yeah, I find that too. I find there's so much going on that it seems worse. I don't know what. Maybe we're hearing more because of media and access to media and video. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to see things, but this world seems to be going to
Yeah. You know, my daily job, you know, when I have my fires and my floods, depending on the severity and the amount of effectiveness to the people, whether it's an apartment building, it's not the same thing. My point being is taking those little bites at a time, because if you think about the Mississippi, then you think about Joplin, then you think about down south even further with the hurricanes, and then you got Tokyo with limited power, and then you haven't gotten into the hot zone yet, and above there, you know, if you just look at the whole thing, yeah, I know
all the goods and all the economy too here too, right, with all the exporting loss for the factories not being able to produce, you know, everything from 35 millimeter tape to you know, VCRs, yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah, no.
I'm sorry. It's late. I'm so tired, and I actually sound pretty good. I'm quite impressed with my ability.
Chris, I think Paul, you know, touched on. I caught the tail end of Paul, and you know, everybody's got to remember, we're a small organization.
Right.
There's a ton of small organizations doing great good, but we're not operating with $200,000 in the bank. I mean, we're raising the money for a program, for an effort, and then that money goes. So we're in a situation where, you know, almost everything that we raised for Japan through that one CrowdRise site that we did is sitting on pallets in Tokyo.
That's really what we're trying to show.
And then people forget about the cost of having Brian there and coordinating the distribution of it. We're going to be in 2 weeks when this program is completed. That bank account is depleted.
Right.
So we need to turn to, you know, where are we going to get the money for the U.S. tornado relief, which hasn't been very good for us. I think Red Cross has gotten a lot of the money a lot. But, you know, like I've said before, we refuse to have this organization be one that they question where our money goes after the fact.
Yeah. We're going to go to a commercial break. Guys, stay with me and be right back.
Okay.
Thanks.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
Welcome back, Disaster Recovery Hour, and we are definitely hitting disaster today. We have Brian Loberg, he's from WANDA, and we also have Jim Arnett, who's Executive Director of WANDA. WANDA stands for World Association of Natural Disaster Awareness and Assistance. Brian...
Hey, sorry to cut you off there, guys.
Yeah.
I'm just in the lobby of my very inexpensive hotel, by the way, and there might be another brownout here. I've been just sort of pointed at,
okay.
Be warned.
Okay.
So if I lose you... no offense, love you guys. That's the way
that's
it goes
serious.
Over here.
Sure.
Could happen any time. Just saying.
There's a web question real quick. You know what, Brian? I'm gonna have to have you come on next week or the week after, whenever you could steal some minutes, because there's just there's just too much content. There's just too many questions I have and some other questions. And I'm glad you were able to wake up or not go to sleep yet. We got 10 minutes before the hour or 9 minutes before the hour. So right, as of right now, I do have another question from a web question, but as of right now, we're looking at your job one is to, okay, I got the goods, they're on ground, they need to go to point B, and that's what you're going to be doing for the next X amount of days. And you were talking about meeting people and then this person's going to put you in contact, and it was the same thing in Haiti. They called them fixers. That was the tag name down there. And here's an economic power, and it's the same thing. It's like when it all happens, it goes almost back to the barter system.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know,
it's really amazing. It's just an underground system, almost of who you know. I go to these events, fundraisers, gatherings, you know, find people here and there and then post things and they talk to you and it's just, it's really, really, really interesting. I don't know how to describe it. It's interesting. That's what I think.
Well, you know what? The economic of this world being flat and how everybody depends on everybody. I mean, look at the.
Yeah.
We talked about it briefly at the beginning about not having goods being produced over there. Let me tell you, I can guarantee you there's people off the Mississippi or down in Tuscaloosa and Alabama, in Joplin, who get their goods from Japan.
Yep.
You know, and if they're able to, hopefully, thank God, they're still in business, or
yep.
they need certain that they've ordered something for the business that's produced
yep.
overseas. You know, it's amazing.
Well, here's one for you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No.
Just try to get them in before I get cut off. Is like, for example, how it affects, you know, Tokyo again, is there's an area called Roppongi. It's like the nightclub sort of restaurant, Western area they call it, like a lot of Westerners, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
non-Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and they've left. So that whole place is hurting bad for business because they're all scared and they left because they're not, you know, they can leave because they're not from here and they don't have to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's another thing for you.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's, you know, there's, since I've been doing the show and been in this industry for a long, long, long time at this point, but there's new curriculums out there in the colleges for emergency management. That's a new degree, not new. It's been around for a long time, but now very much in the forefront. And it's an industry that really needs to be in the forefront because even Japan's of the world, the United States, when the you know what hits the fan, what are we going to do to continue and how are we going to move on? You know, we have post 9/11 because of a human, Jack, you know what, flew some planes into our building and has corrupted our entire system and the way we go about our business. Japan here's just not so much a military might as much as a producer of dollars and cents, if you will. Now they're in shambles, and that ripple effect is happening very strongly throughout the world. And I'm not CNN.
You're right.
I'm not CNN. I'm not I'm on Capitol Hill. I'm just a guy who gets some intel here and there, and I try to read between the lines.
Yeah.
Bri, I really appreciate you coming on and to. Excuse me. Wait, Bill's pointing something out. Oh, yeah, there is one question. I was thinking about: do I ask you now? Or do I ask you next week? But there is what is the what's the radiation? Is there a panic about the radiation?
I'll give you that. I have a radiation guide on my or indicator on my iPhone. It's at about 30 right now, which just to give you an indication, normal is about 20, 25, and within the first week after the earthquake, it was 150. So. There you go.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
And they've opened up a closer region or zone to the plant's now a 30 kilometer. Went from 80 down to 30.
Mm-hmm.
So there's those things of, you know, I guess that's good news.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic news.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like...
You can get closer there to help coast people in close.
It's not a silent killer like carbon monoxide in your home, but...
No.
Yeah, for...
And actually, the cows just started grazing because the grass was all radiated. That's the word, radiated.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. That was funny. About 2 weeks ago, they allowed them to graze around up there.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm not going to go down the nuclear plants and so on and so forth because of what I think our country generates a lot of about 25% of their power from that. It's a man-made product. There's going to be some issues, but when you have a 30-foot wall of water coming at you, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
How much protection can you do?
Yeah,
especially
when the wall sinks about 9 feet.
Yeah,
I mean, you know about that, eh? When the wave came, it the land, or when the earthquake hit, it shrunk, or it okay, now I'm getting tired. It lowered, the land dropped, and the walls dropped, which is bizarre, and
wow.
Then everything just came right over. Yeah.
Never heard that, and I've been, you know what,
they weren't even high enough anyway, if you looked at it. Well, we saw cars, again, on the video with my buddy here, and I'll see them in a few days, is cars on the fourth story, on the roof of four-story buildings.
That's Chris. That's what they're with this typhoon that just went through. There's I've been reading, and a lot of my contacts as well as Brian's, that there's a lot of devastated area now. That basically every day with tide, it comes up to knee level because the ground actually sunk. It's the level of the compared to water level is now lower, and you've got areas that is flooding twice a day with the tide.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was so dry before too. So you imagine, you know, how it's like when something's so
mm-hmm.
dry and then gets so wet. It's just, it just doesn't go into the earth. It just, it floods again.
Yeah.
It does.
That new Intel is just my head is spinning right now. Thinking about it.
I can tell you hours and hours. Okay, let me give you one more. You ready for this? This guy, Masta, local Japanese fellow, works really hard. He went up about a week after up north, and I can't tell you the name of the town, but the further north and where there are factories and the little small oil refineries, they all exploded. Everything exploded, and then the tide came in. So he said when he went up there, he couldn't. Everybody sees the visual on it all, but he says the smell. He says the smell of the fish burnt, the dead bodies, the rubber, the metal, plastic. He says he's never smelt anything worse than when he was in. He says when he was in Calcutta in 1982. But that's his sort of inside joke. But it was just horrific for him to even walk around and they went with the smell. So people forget about that part too. I guess
we got a minute to go. What give my listeners a place they can possibly donate.
Jim, well, the website, wanda.com, WANDAA.org, sorry, not .com, and we've just started on the events / activities page of the website. We've got blogs going of daily updates of Brian, who is kind of communicating back here to home base. So
I wish I could
all the information that anyone wants to donate, you can find it at www.wandaa.org.
Also, by the way, with my video hassles, my computer is doing its thing. It doesn't understand it over here. But anyways, and it's very expensive to be shooting video back and forth from here, so I'm putting a lot together. I've shot about 60 videos, done about 15 interviews, and we'll put a whole thing together, put it up on the site when I get back and have something for people to look at later on, too.
Bri, thanks a bunch. Try to get some sleep. I'm going to reach out for Jim in a couple of days, see if we can get you on the blower again.
Let me know. I'd be happy to do this. This is amazing over here.
Thank you very much. You're doing the Lord's work. I appreciate that. Take care, guys. Jim, I'll give you a call after the show, and let's try to square that away.
Sounds good, Chris. Thanks for the time.
Thanks.
Great show.
Appreciate it. Hey, before I go, I just want to read some names. This is in our local area. If I got a couple of seconds here, we got the specialist Gil Mercado, specialist Kyle Griffin, Lieutenant Richard Torres, Lieutenant John Robleski, Sergeant Frank Carville, Michael. I think I got a couple seconds here. This I'm just reading off names from our local area: Passaic, Emerson, Rivervale. We have Westwood. Sergeant Jason Butkus. These are our fallen heroes in our local area, the Bergen County area. Chris Urbeck from Westwood. Listen, if you see a vet, thank them. It's not a happy Veterans Day, or I say Memorial Day, but I hope you enjoy the show. Catch us next week, and let's go forward. All right, take care.